you should start a podcast. These words have planted a lot of ideas in the heads of a lot of business owners, and there are a lot of ways to respond to them. You might hear it and think, a podcast, me, not a chance. Or maybe, you know what? You're right. I should have a podcast. Most of us fall somewhere in between the two and think something along the lines of, you might be right, but that is a lot of work, and could I make it worthwhile for my business? When you're feeling a little unsure and you take the plunge into podcasting anyway, it can sometimes feel a little bit deflating because getting started is a lot of effort and a lot of work and sometimes a lot of money. But the rewards, though they be considerable, usually come much later on in the process. I'm Megan Doherty, and this is The Company Show by One Stone Creative, where we're talking about the reality of podcasting for your business. My guest this week is Heather Gray, known as The Lime Boss, and she started podcasting after getting just that kind of prompt from her community and fans. And she ended up podcasting for a while before she started to gain traction, but when she started to, really amazing things started to happen. Heather is a functional diagnostic nutrition and bioenergetic practitioner specializing in supporting clients with chronic and complex illnesses such as Lyme disease, mold toxicity, and autoimmune diseases. And her podcast is a powerful force in her business. So in this case study episode, we're talking about how Heather has leveraged her podcast for affiliate sales, sponsors, case studies, new clients. She has done such an impressive job of optimizing the show to serve her business, and there is so much to learn from her. I can't wait for you to hear it. Here's the conversation. Heather, thank you so much for joining me and all of us here on The Company Show.
Thanks for having me.
Could you just start giving us a little bit of background on your business, The Lime Boss, and why you decided to start it, kind of what inspired you?
What inspired me was my story. I usually start off in the beginning with, I was basically born full of shit, right? Like, I was a constipated toddler, you know, sitting on the potty so long that my feet would fall asleep. And that started my introduction into, let's throw band-aids at symptoms, right? Let's give her stool softeners and thick, nasty oils to drink. But nobody was trying to figure out why this four-year-old couldn't poop. Hindsight's 2020. Turned out that was the same year my uncle committed suicide. There was some early childhood trauma, right? I also turned on my celiac gene right around that time when I was eating a standard American diet, the SAD diet. And, you know, was just really sick, you know, from the get-go and for the majority of my life. And so when you put the kind of crappy genetics, I didn't detox well, right? People talk about having a detox bucket. I actually have a detox thimble. And then, you know, the early childhood trauma, the poor diet. I was pretty much a latchkey kid as well, so ate a lot of processed foods, you know. I just became a perfect host. So then when I did get bit by a tick when I was 13, it was just the perfect storm, right?
Not the kind of perfect host you want to be.
Yeah, no. Pride myself on being a good host, but not to the critters. Yeah, so symptoms showed up about 2 years later with my first suicide attempt. That was the first of a few. And then, you know, had the rest of the classic, you know, kind of Lyme disease type symptoms, and then developed 3 autoimmune diseases on top of it. I was 100 pounds overweight. So a lot of issues. And if I would have stuck with the traditional route, I don't think I would be sitting here talking to you today. So that's when I pivoted, became a functional practitioner, and then really kind of put my flag in the sand when I declared myself the Lyme Boss, because working with Lyme folks can be really difficult. Probably one of the most complex areas in the health realm to work in. And so it can be kind of easy to get a little overwhelmed every now and then and be like, screw this, I'm done. I'm not working with Lyme anymore. But when you niche yourself and you rebrand yourself as the Lyme Boss, like, you can't go anywhere. You got to stay in your lane.
Well, especially in a particular area, and I don't know too much about Lyme personally, but it's quite controversial, right? And it's not always regarded as something serious or real by, you know, the traditional medical institution, if I'm correct about that.
Oh, 110%. Like, there's nothing about my life that's not controversial, including the disease that I have. Like, I had undiagnosed Lyme disease for over 27 years. I've had it now for over 30. And just last year, the CDC recognized chronic Lyme disease as a real disease. A year ago, the disease that's been plaguing me my whole life just got recognized last year.
Oh my gosh. I was just reading this week that there's been some progress towards a vaccine for it.
Ooh, I don't care. I don't want one.
You don't? All right.
There's way too many variants. There's too many species. There's usually fast-tracked. The last time they had a Lyme vaccine out, it caused way more damage than it did good. Like, no. Most of us that I know talk like this are the same way. They're like, absolutely not. There's no.
Right. Well, I mean, having the personal experience and the practice with other people who are undergoing it would kind of give you maybe a broader or more in-depth look than an outsider would have.
Yeah, absolutely.
What does your business look like? You mentioned functional practitioner. Kind of what does that mean and how do you practice?
Yeah, so I do some functional lab work to get to the root causes of people's issues. And I don't actually run as much lab work as I used to. Most people's experience with functional labs, functional practitioners especially, it's like $3,000 right out the bat with all these fancy labs and then another $3,000 on top of it with supplements. And after being in practice for so long, I've started seeing patterns in people and found some really in-depth, amazing intake forms that can really help tease out, is it Lyme disease? Is it celiac? Is it mold? Is it co-infections? So that way I'm not wasting time and money on labs and supplements that aren't needed. So between, you know, a person's medical history and the intake forms, I can get a really great handle. I'm a phenomenal case manager. Most Lyme people, because we've had to be our own advocate for so long, they come to me very educated. They're very, you know, they've got these beautiful pieces to their puzzle, but a lot of times they're in the wrong order or they're just missing one little corner piece that helps put it all together. And that's where I really shine is just taking a step back and going, okay, you've done these pieces. That's beautiful. We need to swing back around and just tweak this a little bit and add this and do this. And then their kind of health puzzle unlocks. It's quite amazing when we stop focusing on treatment and we start focusing more on lifestyle, diet, nervous system resetting, detoxification, you know, all these other foundational health things. You know, I have a testimonial on my website. She says it was like a magic. It wasn't magic. It's just we've gotten so far off the mark on how humans are supposed to be living that when we get back to the basics, our bodies go, oh, thank God. Yeah. I thought she was never going to figure it out. You know, I keep giving her these warning signs as symptoms, but she keeps ignoring me with these over-the-counter stuff until I have to, you know, scream louder and bigger until I really get your attention with a diagnosis, right? A lot of these diagnoses, even autoimmune, they're 5, 10, 15 years in the making before a lot of times you'll actually get a symptom and get diagnosed. A lot of times people think I'm crazy and I'm a little on the, you know, health nut side. I can almost guarantee it, 5, 10, 15 years from now, something's going to give and they're going to start their health journey. And I'm hoping that something I've said back then, have them go, oh God, what did that crazy lady say about blah, 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 you know?
Yeah, one thing you said was really, really interesting. It's amazing how much of good business is good onboarding and getting the right information at the 110%. Top notes. It's really interesting to hear that. Well, at a certain point in running your business and, you know, developing your practice and in working with all these different people, you decided I should have a podcast. Can you tell me about kind of that moment and when you decided to do it and why?
You know, I got told by quite a few people because I just put out these random videos, you know, talking about random stuff, usually controversial stuff, right? Educational stuff, inspiring stuff. And I just got told, I think by the third or fourth person that told me, you should have a podcast. I was like, okay. And I literally put it out on Facebook one day. I was like, hey, does anybody have any equipment? And I had one girl who said, yeah, I've got a mic you can have. So I met up with her at a coffee shop, got the mic, up and ran. Like, the beginning ones are so bad. The video quality is bad. Like, the sound, it's just so bad.
Everyone's beginning episodes are terrible. It's just the way it goes. Got to get through.
But I just put out my 100th episode a couple weeks ago, you know.
Congratulations.
A difference. Thank you. It's, you know, the 2 years have made, and it's awesome.
Marvelous. When you started the podcast, what was the kind of link to your business with it? How were you hoping it would help or support your business, or would it act as marketing? What were you hoping it would do for you?
You know, in the beginning, I hoped that it would kind of set me apart as a leader authority, right? Mm-hmm. And I was hoping to get business from it. I was hoping that people would hear it and, you know, be compelled, right? Like I was when I became an FDN. I heard the founder of Reed Davis on Sean Croxton's Underground Wellness and was like, oh my gosh, that's my missing puzzle piece. That's what I need to do. And that's when I jumped in. So that's really kind of what I started and hoped that it would be. And that hasn't been the case. I'm now starting to get a little here and there from a business from the podcast, a little bit more from the affiliate stuff that I started doing. but it's turned more into an amazing networking platform. Like, it's crazy the people that I've met, and then through them, what connections and doors that it's opened, you know, to speaking engagements, to media pass. Dave Asprey, Bulletproof Coffee, he's got the big biohacking conference. I just landed a media pass, $5,000 ticket because of my podcast, because I had him on my show. The list goes on and on about how many doors have opened up, who I've been introduced to and invited to go to because of this podcast. And now I'm getting so many emails of people pitching their people to be on my show. It's crazy. And so I do see that that business piece will start coming about a little bit more. I am starting to find out that podcasting is a long game, like, period, end of story. There is no, like, quick rise with podcasting. You just got to put in your time.
I'm going to clip that piece of audio and send it to every client that we have.
I wish somebody would have told me, like, literally within 6 months, because it's a lot of work. But within the first 6 months, I was like, screw this, I'm done. Like, crickets, no one's listening, blah, 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 blah. And my husband was like, Heather, don't give up. You got this, you know, like my little ring assistant, you know, squirt some water in my mouth, smack me around a little bit, push me back out there. And I'm so glad he did, because I think it was just like a few weeks later, I got introduced to one of my heroes and got to, you know, interview my hero on the podcast, and then got introduced to another hero and got it, you know, and so just all these doors started opening. But I swear that first 6 to 8 months was just brutal.
It really can be, especially because the work of a podcast is so front loaded. Like, after you've been doing it for 6 or 8 months, you know, it's just part of your work week, but it's a real struggle at the beginning to plan the show, do all of the art, figure out your cadence, practice recording, learn how to do the editing if you're doing that in-house. It's a ton of work, and it feels like initially it's for nothing. 6 to 8 months in, that's when you started to get these, you know, cool door openings. Do you have a couple more stories about, like, cool things that have happened because of the podcast that, you know, would not have happened otherwise, that have made an impact on you and your business?
And I just recently landed a first sponsor. So they signed up for 3 months. That's coming up to an end. And then just recently landed a new sponsor. So 2 sponsors now. So for the last 6 months, I'm actually now a professional podcaster. I am actually getting paid, you know, to do that. Well, so here's another story. So I actually am a host of another show out of Canada, because after having him on my show, I fell in love with him and his company so much that I was just like, I have to be involved. What can I do? And a month later, they're like, how would you like to be our podcast host? And I get paid monthly to be their podcast host. So that was another really cool story that opened up because of my show.
Yeah. And a whole other income stream for your, for Absolutely. Your business and for your lifestyle. That's marvelous.
Yep.
Do you mind if I ask about the sponsorships? Could you give us kind of maybe a ballpark of, after, you know, you're getting to 100 episodes, now you're starting to get sponsors, what was the kind of the range of rate that you're able to get from sponsors?
Right now I'm asking, was it $295 a month with a 3 month commitment, minimum commitment, because it should be a 6 month commitment, because it just takes time to move the needle when it comes to this type of stuff. But so that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
Well, no harm in starting off with the 3 months for your first one, right? Like, it's an easy yes for companies.
You would think so. You wouldn't believe how many no's I got though, before I found those yeses. It was kind of crazy. I must've pitched at least to 15 different people. 15 to 20 before I got my first yes.
Could you talk about that process a little bit? Not every podcast needs sponsors. I know you've got like a really wonderful kind of multi-pronged approach for how you're using your podcast, which we'll get into more. Tell me about the kind of, especially trying to get the first sponsors. When did you decide you should have a sponsor? And how did you go about doing that initial pitching?
So in the very, very beginning, I started making my own commercials to companies I was already affiliates with, right? And then I would put those in as commercials. Because I was like, you know, forget it. If I've got a target, you know, if I got a captive audience, you know, I'm going to pitch some things that are going to be beneficial to them. And I'm going to try to, you know, again, make some money off of this, because it is so time. And then now I'm starting to pay people to help with the editing and the other things. So now it's actually costing me money. So that's how I started off in the beginning. A little bit here and there, not a whole lot, you know, $50, $100, you know. And then I think I was at a health conference. And another practitioner there was telling me, she's a podcast, and I don't know how we got on the topic, but she said something about how her sponsors, and I was like, wait, what? And so I was like, how did you get them? And she's like, you just have to ask. She's like, Heather, there's 20 vendors here at this store right now. I want you to go and at least ask 4 right now. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay. And that's what I did. And so I went around, you know, to the ones that I had already been talking to and kind of had made a rapport with, ones that made sense for my show, right? There was one person I pitched to. Her product would have been incredible. I have her target market audience, like, and it's not an expensive product, and it could potentially save people's lives with Lyme disease. And they turned it down, and I just kind of wanted to like bang her over the head and go, because she had tried another podcast, but it was just geared towards women. And I'm like, no, mine's geared towards Lyme disease, and yours is Lyme disease prevention. Like, this seems like a match made in heaven, but I couldn't get her to understand it, and I'm not going to sit there and chase people. But yeah, so I just keep asking. And then this last one, the first one that I got, I met at a Lyme disease conference. I had tried his product and it worked. And I knew he was newer in business and it just seemed like a win-win. And so that's how I presented it, as a win-win. You know, here's some exposure, blah, blah, blah. I've got your target market. And then the second one, he's a really amazing Lyme clinic out of Scottsdale. And he actually flew me out there, put me up, gave me treatments for 2 days so I could be a better ambassador for what he does. And then, of course, you know, I was thinking after I got back, I was like, duh, if he was willing to spend that much time getting me to endorse him, like, he'd be silly not to, you know. So I really quickly, like, hey, blah, 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 sponsor the podcast. He's like, yeah, absolutely. So we're hammering out the details for that.
Very cool.
You just never know until you ask, right? It's just like any other sales game. It's a freaking numbers game. And you just, it's got to make sense, obviously. I'm not going to like pitch to a, you know, an athletic group or, you know, wouldn't make sense for my show. But if you know enough people, there's so many amazing products out there too. Usually products are where it's at, but I think the Lyme clinic, I think it'll do good.
Oh, awesome. And when you mentioned another strategy that you use, and this is one I think is really brilliant that you've done, is creating ads for products that you're an affiliate for. So these are external companies that you've got an affiliate relationship with. If somebody follows your link or your recommendation, they buy it, you get a commission. How did you structure that? How did you find the products you wanted to promote, and sort of just kind of talk us through that process and kind of getting that set up for yourself and your show?
Everything I have stood behind, I have tried, and I use on a, you know, daily purpose. Like, I don't put my name behind anything I have not tried, and it doesn't make a difference in my own life. When people have had chronic illnesses, a lot of times we need some of that low-hanging fruit. And so a lot of these products can help, you know, relieve pain, you know, get you more energy, have your water taste better with yummy electrolytes, you know, that taste like chocolate caramel. So it's a lot of these health things. And it started by me watching another person on Instagram kind of acting like commercials that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what is she doing? I don't understand this, you know, because as a practitioner, right, like, I've just never seen that before in the old school way of marketing. And then now I'm seeing these affiliate marketers, these influencers, and I'm like, well, shit, I can do that too. You know, so I kind of learned from watching and was like, hey, how did you do that? Oh, I set up an affiliate account. Well, how do you do that? Go to their website, go to the very bottom. It usually says affiliate links, you know. It's sad because I see some people like poo-pooing, like, I'm not making money off of this and blah, 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 blah. I don't really think that there's a problem with that. Like I said, if it's something tried and true, sadly, especially in the way of like famous people, there's no way in hell Eva Longoria is coloring her hair with preference box color. You know, that's just BS, and we can call that BS, you know. But if you know the person and you trust them and you like them, you know, like I said, everything on my site is, I've tried personally. There's not anything I would put up there without passing the test first.
So when you decided to start trying to kind of monetize the show in this way and help it kind of be a, you know, an income generating part of your business, what was the size of your show at the time? How many downloads were you getting? Kind of what sort of audience engagement? Where were you at?
That's a good question. I don't know. I didn't know much about analytics until like 2 months ago.
Okay.
To be quite honest with you. So I started a spreadsheet and started keeping track. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I think I probably hit another dry patch where I was just like, screw this, I'm done. And, you know, to take some of that emotionality out of it, I decided to start tracking to see, okay, mm-hmm. am I actually moving the needle? Am I getting more people every week? You know, how many downloads, blah, blah, blah. So I just recently started doing that a couple of months ago.
What are you at now in terms of just like downloads for the show or any other stats that you are tracking at the moment?
It's a little over 13,000 downloads, but that's all together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've got 250 active Spotify folks, and I think each episode gets between 100 and 300 plays. So still on the small side as far as, you know, podcasting goes.
I love that you've done so many things with it anyway, because, I mean, yes, by the numbers, it's a small show. You know, it's not, say, in the top 20%, maybe not top 50, but you've got sponsors. You've monetized through affiliates. You've gotten $5,000 conference tickets. You've met your heroes and done all this professional networking. That's rad.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I went from hating my podcast to like now it's my baby. I love it because of the doors that it's opened for me, you know? And if I'm a little on the woo-woo side, and I have a friend who does human design work with astrology and like reading my palm. And she's like, you are a creative artist in the spotlight. And that always felt right to me. You just saw my comedy bit. Most people are like, holy cow, this is your first time doing stand-up? Like, I'm kind of a natural in front of the camera, you know, on stage. Not everybody can. And I'm embracing that. Here's this place, this platform that I can actually shine with and bring in other amazing people to talk about these hard topics that really aren't out there. You know, a podcast changed my life. I'm just trying to do the same thing for others, you know, especially in this very controversial Lyme disease world.
So can you talk a little bit about your show? Is it always an interview or do you do solo episodes? Is it a mix? How did you decide to structure it?
It's a mix. I always had an interview with me. And then I was told I'm always hiring some sort of marketing somebody. And they're like, no, 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 no. If you want to stay, you know, the authority in this, every so many episodes, you really need to put out a solo one. I was like, that's great. Because I'm starting to wonder that myself, right? Because if I keep showcasing these other people, like, then how am I getting my voice out there? Because I hate it when the host talks too much, right? Like, if I'm listening to a show because I'm tuning in for the guest, the host turns it all into them. Like, oh, it drives me bonkers. So I really try to be mindful of how much I'm speaking. So these solo podcasts that I do once every 4 or 5 episodes, I put out a solo.
I found this is something most of the shows that, you know, we produce for clients, very often they are interview shows. But whenever those solos come out, whether or not it's a, like, you know, a random bonus or just kind of regular part of the cadence like yours, they always perform just a little bit better and they get a little bit higher engagement.
I'm still shocked. I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Like, here's this big name and like my solo one kind of beat them in the stats. And I was like, that's what?
Because you are becoming the authority and, you know, you're developing this relationship with your audience, and it's a weird one. It's kind of a parasocial relationship, right? Like, they feel like they know you. You have no way of knowing them, but they really feel like they know you.
When I meet them in person, especially when I go to these health conferences and other health practitioners are listening, and they know, oh my God, and your kid just blah, blah, blah. And then this just happened and whatever happened with the blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't even know your name. Like, it's kind of bizarre. One of the coolest times, I was at a networking event here in Fort Collins, and I go over and talk to this girl. She's kind of hanging out by herself, and she looks at my name tag, and all of a sudden, her eyes get this big, and I'm like, oh, shit, what did I do? What did I say now? You know, where does she know me from? And she pulls up her phone, and she shows me my podcast, you know, and I was just like, oh, my God. She's like, I was listening to this morning. I was like, oh. That was incredible.
What a great moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love hearing things like that. And it's really interesting to me how consistent that is across industries, across podcast types, across podcast, like those solo episodes. People just want the host. I love it. So can you talk us through your workflow a little bit for creating episodes? What's kind of the size of the team involved? You mentioned you'd recently started to get some help with editing or other elements of the show. What does creating an episode look like in your world?
I've only got one other person on my team right now. And they helped come up with the new look, the new thumbnail. You know, they help me edit and put, you know, music on the intro and the outro. So now, you know, when I record a video, I just put it in a certain folder, puts it all together for me, comes up with a copy, comes up with the graphics, comes up with the hashtags. And then I just, you know, make sure to share it across all the platforms. Pretty soon, I think I'm going to get him. He actually makes some clips now, and he'll put them out on social media during the week. So he also posts for me like 4 times a week now too.
Oh, lovely. And what about the planning for episodes? How far in advance are you planning? Like, you know, I want to talk to, say, this guest in July. I'm going to do this solo episode in May. What's your content planning look like?
I don't plan. I am booked out for 8 months. And I've probably got 4 months in the can. So I literally could stop recording today and I would have a podcast for another year. And so from there, the only thing that I really plan is, so I picked out all my Lyme specific ones because May is Lyme Disease Awareness Month. And I really want to shine a light on that. You know, so that was the only one that I kind of went through and pulled some people out of order and put them together for my Lyme month. Other than that, they're just, I record them and then they just go in the back of the line. And then, you know, when that time comes up, then they're up. You know, I don't really have topics. I don't really have a specific, you know, once in a blue moon, I did have one famous doctor that I interviewed who had a launch coming up. And she was like, I'm like, oh, this isn't going to come out until August. She's like, oh, my launch is in May. I'm like, okay, don't tell anybody, but I'll, you know, I'll move you ahead, you know, to accommodate her.
See, that's a relationship building play. That's just a nice thing to help somebody else.
Most people understand. I tell them, this will probably come out in 5 months. And they're like, oh, okay, just make sure to give me the links. And yeah, I wish I was cool enough that had specific topics and, you know, social calendar, all that. No, thank you.
I wish I had 8 months of runway. Grass is always greener.
I didn't ever did a lot of editing either, like ever. Like, I pressed play. And once we did that, we went with it. And I really never needed to. Now that I'm putting commercials in, I'll say, let's take a quick break, you know, and now my person will, you know, clip out that break and put in a commercial, slap on the intro, slap on the outro. Now we have a show.
Wait, I was going to ask about the ads that you're doing, kind of for the affiliate ones that you've done in the past, the sponsors you have now. Are you inserting them dynamically or are they being embedded directly into the episode?
They're being embedded directly into the episode. So it is evergreen.
That's nice. That can be higher value.
Yeah, right. And that's what I was thinking too. At some point when my numbers get better, the price will go up. But for right now, I figured just starting off that it felt fair.
Fair enough. And I mean, also the nice thing with embedded ads is like it's less technical. There's less moving parts that you need to deal with on a week-to-week basis. And that can, especially for, you know, when you're running a whole business, can be very helpful.
Yeah, the simpler I need this, like I can't have some, you know, unless that somehow I'm making enough money with this that this becomes my whole business and this is what I'm focusing on, then I can look at making it more difficult. But I'm still seeing clients one-on-one. I still am putting out other marketing things. Although, I mean, it's getting that direction. Like in the last 3 months, it was kind of a 50-50 split between one-on-one clients and what I'm bringing in from my podcast. And now it's more like 70-30 where what I'm bringing in from my podcast compared to one-on-one clients.
That's awesome. And can you kind of give a ballpark of what your podcast is bringing in on a monthly basis?
I'm also adding in what I get paid to be a host for a podcast. So yeah, so between those two, around $4,000 a month.
That is very respectable and, you know, like the stretch goal of many, many podcasts out there.
I realize how fortunate I am to be getting paid to do what I'm doing.
Well, and I mean, looking at all like the things that you've got set up, so you've got all this foundational work kind of done now and you've got so much content runway where, you know, you can spend some time focusing on marketing and building up these other systems that can, you can just leverage that further and further. So, you know, you put yourself into this amazing position with this marketing channel that you've built for yourself.
I feel like I did. And I even, so like I went through because I'm backed up so bad. I was like, all right, June, July, no options for a recording. Like I have to say no. And I'm getting all these amazing people. And I'm just like, I have to, because I'm so backed up with back orders. I can't. And I need to take some time off. Like it takes a lot. I need to get caught up on some of this other stuff and breathe, right? Maybe take a vacation or something.
Every now and then, you know, not, you don't want to go wild with it, but I sometimes think that the only thing more satisfying than getting a great opportunity is being in the position where you turn it down.
Yeah,
you
right?
Just got other stuff going on. It's a nice spot to be in.
I'm booked out now till August. And I'm like, sure, you either can hit me back up in August or here's the link and you can try to find something in August. But it does feel good.
It's kind of a little bit of an I have arrived feeling.
Right?
At least I find it so. I love it. All right, let's talk tech stack. What do you record on? What do you edit on? What do you use for technology for your show?
Yeah, I'm so low tech. I just recently upgraded to a Yeti Blue mic. I have a little ring light back here, and then I have a camera.
Logitech, I think, yeah.
Logitech, yeah. That I would like to upgrade, I think. I think a better camera would be nice. I usually record on Zoom. You know, my husband is a Zoom guru. That's kind of what he does for a living. And so I learned how to trick Zoom into recording on 1080 all the time. And so doing, yeah, this little trick. So usually the video is a little bit better than what most Zoom out there is. So that's nice.
Can you share the trick or is it a secret?
No, it's not a secret. You hit record, you hit share screen, and you want to share the screen that you want to record. And then you hit stop share. And then from there, you can either pause it. So I'll pause, don't stop, because if you stop the recording, then you're going to start the whole process all over again. So I'll pause it and I'll wait for my guest to come on. Then when my guest comes on, all I have to do is press play. And then we're recording in 1080. That's the little workaround, is that you have to share the screen, unshare the screen while it's recording.
Interesting. That's a really good tip. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. So yeah, so pretty low tech.
It doesn't have to be high tech and fancy to have good results, as you're amply demonstrating, which I think is really, really cool. What about expenses for the show? What are you kind of finding? What's the investment that you make in having it produced, like, and not counting your time, let's say, but in the tech that you're paying for or the and the help that you're getting?
Yeah, the help is around $400 a month, which is ridiculous, I know. I mean, like, ridiculously helpful. Like, for them to post four to five times a week on my social media, plus editing, like, I really lucked out there.
Keep that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he does a great job. And he's so cute. Like, he's young and he's learned so much from watching the shows and listening to me. And it's actually helped him out on a few of his little health journeys. So hopefully plant some seeds with him, you know, hopefully he won't have a lot of these other health issues that, you know, other people his age are. So what a blessing. So yeah, so around $400 a month is what it's costing me.
And that's not a bad return either, then, looking at what it's generating for you.
Yeah, indeed.
So what do you think will be the next big milestone that you hit with your show?
The goal would be to have two paying sponsors, because right now I've gotten one and then the first one didn't re-up. So just in time for the other one to come on board, which is awesome. But it would be really great to have two sponsors every show. And then I'm not having to worry about changing in and out my little silly commercials that I've made for my affiliates. And it just feels more professional. That's my next goal for the show.
I love that. And for someone who's watching this and thinking, you know, maybe I should start a podcast, I'm sort of thinking about it. What's a piece of advice you would give someone just starting out?
I tell them that it's a long game. It's not a quick fix and a quick return of investment. You would need to be in it. And I think these days it just keeps getting harder and harder, because as more and more people are like, oh, I'm going to podcast. Oh, I'm going to podcast. It's just getting more and more saturated. So I think it might even take you longer to move the needle, right? Because it's just so saturated. So your heart really needs to be in it. You've got to love what you're doing. And that's going to show too. You can't do it just because you think it's going to be some sort of a moneymaker or some sort of this. Like, your heart really needs to be in it, because there are so many shows to choose from that people can kind of tell, right, on where your heart is in this show, you know? So really got to love what you're
Misery
doing.
Is audible, even if unexpressed.
Exactly.
Heather, thank you so much. Where can people listen to your show and find out more about the work that you do?
The Lyme Boss, across all platforms. And that's, you know, Lyme, like Lyme disease, L-Y-M-E, not like we're making margaritas. So
all of the links will be in the show notes wherever you are listening to this episode. Heather, thank you again. This has been such a treat.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
Next week is an exciting week because we're opening up applications for speakers at this year's Podcasting for Business conference. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite channel to catch all of the details. As always, this show is produced by the team at One Stone Creative, and if you like what you hear, the best way to support the show is to share it with someone that you think should have a podcast.